Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Okay, this is episode 275. This week, we've got a great conversation with Frater O about some of the research in the books we've been reading right now. And it's pretty cool. We've got a lot to talk about. So sit back, relax, have a relaxing drive into work. Hope it's not too cold wherever you're driving, and I hope your car heats up fast. Before we get into it, I just would like to quickly mention our show sponsor, which is MasonicRevival.com, Masonic design group that inspires elegance for the modern-day Freemason, proudly serving you since 2009. They've got some really cool contemporary designs for Masons of today. We're not talking about the usual type ties you buy out of Luther's or any other Masonic place. No offense, but those designs have been around for years. It's about time somebody came out with something really cool, something really fresh. Right now, really enjoying their Forget-Me-Not collection. Comes in red, blue, black, and like a light blue, and even have the pocket squares to go with them. He's got the Regal, which is a new Masonic watch, as well as he just launched a new series of Masonic watches, which use the interchangeable straps like a Timex Weekender uses. Pretty cool. So check them out, www.masonicrevival.com. Also, I want to mention that next week is the Christmas episode, and we've got a special one. Brother Adam Thayer went ahead and put together a really cool Christmas episode. It's already up. It's ready to go. So on Christmas Day, it's going to launch at 9:30 at night. Let's get right into this conversation we had with Frater O. All right, everybody, we're back this week with Frater O, and we're going to have an amazing conversation about, well, we really couldn't decide, and we got to talking right in the green room before we started recording, and we started talking about some of the things that we've been reading lately and our interests and kind of where our research is leading. As Freemasons, we're constantly researching. It's just one of the calls that we have as Masons and esoteric Masons at that, that we're never satisfied with the answers we have. We keep searching for more light. And we just started talking, and we pretty much decided that this is some good stuff, and we should probably turn this into the episode. So that's what we're going to do. So with us again is Frater O. It's great to have you back on the program, bro.
It's always a pleasure to be back. So what are you currently reading?
Oh, my current reading list. So I was just, like we were talking about before, I just finished Graham Hancock's last book that he came out with, which was called Fingerprints of the Gods, The Quest Continues, which was a pretty decent book. Interesting, I would say the first 4 hours of the book really lays out the book is like over 50 chapters. It really is heavy on astronomy and astrology. A brief introduction in the book would be, you know, they talk about the Perry Rees map, and he talks about the science behind the Perry Rees map, how it's a map composed from looking at older maps, and how old could these maps be. And for those of the listeners we have this evening don't know what the Perry Rees map is, it's essentially a map that shows Antarctica and its coastline and its geographical features before it was frozen. And so the last time it was unfrozen were many thousands of years ago, before it entered into its ice age. And it accurately depicts these things, and these mountain ranges and things of that nature are very much validated with technology that is pretty recent, as far as the 60s and 70s even, and even some of the expeditions that happened down there with like Shackleton. So it talks about the Perry Rees map, and then it goes into astronomy and astrology, and it talks about arc minutes, and it talks about latitude and longitude and the precessional path of our planet and the sun and the gravitational implications that means on the planet as we're moving through space at several hundred thousand miles per hour. Fascinating read. The ultimate revelation in the book is really good. If you really want to pick it up, I think you could read like the introduction, and then you could skip to like chapter 40 and probably read to the end and be pretty well off. But really good. Book really talks about ancient civilizations, you know, prehistory, antediluvian civilizations, where they came from, who they are, when they lived, and how that culture may have influenced the other cultures around the planet. Egyptians, several in South America, Native Americans, Dogon tribe, all of these kind of whatever you want to call a primitive civilization where these people may have come forth as emissaries. Primary evidence looking at like Quetzalcoatl or Viracocha, these supposed to be these very Caucasian looking gentlemen with beards in Mexico who came that were cloaked. Now, these are the legends of what these beings looked like, and a very European kind of looking. So, you know, Graham kind of puts two and two together. It is interesting, though. I mean, the book is just written this last year, but man, does he reference, like, tons of stuff that happened to him in, like, 1990s, which to me is a little troublesome, considering, you know, he may have wrote the original Fingerprints of the Gods, you know, not too previously, but I don't remember him referencing 1990s stuff. So it's almost like he's referencing really old experiences and putting it all into a newer book. Ultimately, worth the read, worth a maybe like you go out and you buy it at a Barnes & Noble or on Amazon or something for $15-$20. It's worth it. It's a good book to have in the, as Greg Kaminsky said, in your reference library. How about you? What's got your super attention lately?
Yeah, Graham Hancock. Before I get into the books that I'm reading, he's a great writer. He's a very interesting person. He had a TED Talk that actually was removed. Supposedly, it was all based on hacking consciousness and ayahuasca, but unfortunately, using more ideology towards using psychedelics to hack consciousness. Using the old school. But his books are cool.
He's
a great writer.
He has a really cool ability to kind of blend his personal stories and experiences in with kind of the research. You know, he'll talk research or whatever, and then all of a sudden he's like, 1993, Cairo, Egypt. I woke up and looked outside to see, you know, whatever. Like, he does a good job at blending the two together. Kind of, you know, the whole idea of taking your experience and the story and mixing them together. That's kind of like a real Hunter S. Thompson thing, right? Like a Gonzo-style reporting. And it's interesting because that's just the way so many people write. I mean, that's kind of how Holy Blood, Holy Grail was written, too. Talks about how they got to where they were and their experiences and also the story. You know, that's kind of how I've been going about putting together the Occult Anatomy book that we're doing, is sharing the experience and trying to write what we've gone through, trying to figure this damn thing out. But it's been pretty interesting. I hijacked your question, so sorry.
Oh, just for a side note, you're researching the Occult Anatomy stuff. It could definitely drive you into the sea of chaos. It's a challenge to always to make sure to stay grounded.
Yeah.
And, but a book was turned on to by a close brother is A Primer of Higher Space, the Fourth Dimension by Claude Bragdon. Now, it was written in the early 1900s, and it gets into the fourth dimensional space. If we get into dimensions, I highly recommend checking out. If you want to learn more, Carl Sagan. He did a whole episode back in the early days, it was probably the 80s, on just dimensional space, understanding on how dimensions work and the first and the second dimension, the third and fourth and fifth and et cetera. But it talks about in this book on how to use the mystical states throughout history that's been written, how to get from the third to the fourth dimension and using the mind. And he uses all kinds of using allegories as representation. One of them you'd really enjoy, he actually uses the first chapter is about playing cards. So he gets into, you know, the analog allegory of just it's actually the first tarot deck. And, you know, what is space and what each character represents to get to these states. But ultimately, he kind of gets into, you know, the body's in a third dimension, but then there's another dimension beyond that. And it's some beautiful plates. There's some amazing, amazing diagrams on getting into understanding in a third dimensional mindset what the constructs would possibly look like from a fourth dimension. And for those of you that are listening and they're having a hard time following, think about the movie that came out fairly recently, Interstellar, right? Great sci-fi movie. You know, if you haven't seen it, then spoiler alert, I highly recommend checking it out. But he gets to a place towards the end of the movie where he crosses into this another dimension, so to speak. And it's complex to look at things from a different dimensional construct. So this movie, the movie's great, but this book is something I've been nerding out quite a lot. And the allegory of the human body and the atom, and it's this extremely, extremely, extremely esoteric. Highly recommend it. And it's definitely, you can find it for free. It's passed its copyright online in many different PDFs. And we'll definitely include this into the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. So what I'll do is I'll download it as a, I'll try to rip it off as a PDF, and I'll just put it into the episode bonus content as a downloadable PDF.
Digressing on the other books that you're researching.
So the other book right now that I'm reading is by David Wilcock. If the name sounds familiar, he's the dude on Ancient Aliens, and he's also got a show on Gaia Network on the interwebs. This latest book he came out with is called The Ascension Mysteries, Revealing the Cosmic Battle Between Good and Evil. Released, I think, just a few months ago. He's authored two other books that I know of, Synchronicity Key and The Source Field. So Dave Wilcock has, his other books are bestsellers, right? I mean, he kind of deals with, I guess I would call it hot buttons, as far as, like, if pop culture had a religion, it might be UFOs and, well, it might be New Agey stuff, right? It goes through his parts of his life were not so great. He talks about his personal experiences. He talks about all these things of ascension, the transfiguration of man to God. Like, he references Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad and, you know, all these characters from all over the world, all different times, and these kind of things. Talks about how to actually ascend, if you will. And I don't buy a lot of what he's talking about in his book personally, but I do think it's a good read so far, in that it kind of opens your eyes to other concepts, much like if you watch a science fiction movie for the first time and you see something crazy and you're like, oh man, I never even thought that something that cool I could imagine. And it allows you to form new connections in your brain, you know, without doing acid. So Dave tends to blend several topics together. And we talked a little bit about this. I mean, it's a little Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, right? It has everything I wanted in a theory. It has aliens and ancient Egypt and pyramids and ascension and religion and you name it. I mean, he's kind of got it. It has its place in his book. And his two other books are just interwoven and super heavy in a lot of proven scientific fact. To push, not an agenda, to push an idea that he has. And in this book, he pushes an idea that he believes is absolutely true and is the way to realize ascension if you were into doing that yourself. So he believes that he's had contact with higher intelligence, like, maybe he's talked to aliens or talked to something on the other side. And there's a lot of people, a lot of listeners out there probably thinking, well, this is crazy and kooky. It's kind of wild. And it is. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. But I think the more we listen to what people have to say and not always think they're nuts, kind of really opens your mind to different possibilities. And when your mind is open to those possibilities, then you can look at your own inside, your internal and your inner work yourself, and work on that esoteric thought process in your own life. He's got some neat areas in the book. Worth it? I don't know yet. I'm only a little ways into the book so far, so maybe a endorsement later, but not quite yet.
It's always fun to be able to kind of just go off serious research and really, really heavy stuff and just make it light and have a good chuckle, or just kind of ponder sci-fi.
I needed a little bit of a break, right? Because I got this great presentation coming up in January, at the end of January in Texas, where I'm going to be talking about The Word, which has been most of my research for the last year and a half. The Word as it relates to occult anatomy and also the history of the word, both historical and philosophical and scientific. And so I've been reading so many books on the word. I mean, I think I just finished like the third in a row. And then I read the Graham Hancock book. Now I'm reading this one. And I'm finding myself meandering off. So now I'm trying to get back on track. I got to get back on the studies of the word. So I got two more books on the word I'm going to finish before January 26th and hopefully be able to pull a lot of that neat research, put that into the presentation as well. But, you know, the word is always something out there that I'm always into, like the occult anatomy stuff.
Yeah, it's always nice to get lost in that kind of stuff. And it's funny you mention that. You know, there's a book I distracted myself by. It was written by a guitar player from Blink 182, Tom DeLonge. He's been recently kind of been pretty famous. He was in a lot of the Podesta emails that got leaked from WikiLeaks. And he writes a fiction novel called Secret Machines. And it's there's multiple different storylines. That supposedly is all based on fact from, you know, really interesting. Supposedly they say it's, you know, aliens or, you know, advanced technology. And it's a fun fiction story where you can get lost in. And supposedly he had deep secret military ties when he wrote this book. Well, regardless of the backstory, it definitely paints a really, really fun picture. And it's a light read, fun, quick and easy. But there's also rumors out there that Tom is a Mason.
Well, there's a picture floating around of him in a Masonic apron at a lodge, and I kind of picked up a couple times when he was on George Nuri's Coast to Coast. George asked him straight up a couple times, "Are you a Mason?" He's like, "I don't want to talk about that." Like, all right, dude.
Well, Tom, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on the show.
Yeah, man. You don't have to say you're a Mason to come on the show. You can just come on the show, and I can talk to you about some really kick stuff, and you don't ever have to reveal anything. You can come on the show and talk to like-minded folks.
It was a fun read. He brought in a really famous writer. Off the top of my head, I forget who it is, but it's really well written. It's a great storyline. I highly recommend it if you like getting lost into fiction. And there's a documentary being done, and there's multiple books that have been written that are going to be released over time. And he actually, I think he got the cover of Rolling Stone, was it? Or he's a big Rolling Stone article that was on him fairly recently too.
And, sweet.
It's a good read.
That's cool, man. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
What about you? What else are you digging into?
Man, not a whole lot at the moment.
What about the 12 books of Moses?
The Pentateuch. That is something that I've really been enjoying going through. It's really cool because Robert Allen, who's the guy who put it together, has all these annotations. Just basically notes, guys, that are underneath the passages, and really breaks down the text in a better way so that you can understand it. Because yes, you're reading antiquated text, but also it doesn't actually mean what you think it means, because you might not be familiar with Hebrew, because Hebrew has a different context even than what you can read. Like, yes, you can read it in English, but the context is still different. It doesn't always mean what we think it means. So he breaks that down, and actually in several instances throughout it, you know, really talks about. So in this area, he says this, which could mean this or this, or if it's in this context, it could mean this, and is very likely to actually mean this. Whoa. And you go, wow, so when he said he bought a cookie, he wasn't buying a cookie, he was taking a drink of water. Exactly, because back then it was a colloquialism. You know, a bad example, but it's very interesting read. I love religious science in terms of looking at the ancient texts and critically looking at them today with what we know. And it helps us understand, you know, kind of cross or parallel reading, looking at ancient cultures and then comparing it to the Pentateuch, or maybe it's modern Christian texts like the modern quote unquote, you know, the four books of the Gospels. But looking at those critically for their historical value. Most everybody knows I'm a deist, so I don't follow any religious dogmatic system. I'm not a Christian, I'm not a Jew, I'm not a Muslim, but I do read the texts because I find them fascinating. So that's what I'm, you know, one of the other things I'm looking at right now. Continually, you know, researching that stuff. I mean, I think I read, Reza Aslan's book, Zealot, The Life and Times of Jesus. Man, I think I read that thing like three times. That was a really good book. Lots of great historical pieces in there. Also, Dr. Bart Ehrman, who wrote Jesus Interrupted. Man, that's another great book. But, you know, that one really points out a ton of the, not only inaccuracies, but the, The book really focuses on the contradictions that exist in the Bible. Same story told two different times, two different books. You know, example is, you know, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John talks about the birth of Jesus and the different scenes. Was he born in the manger? Was he born in a house? Which one's more popular? It's really a pretty interesting read, but anything by Bart Ehrman's really good. He also wrote another good book that I read two or three times, which was The Gospel of Judas Iscariot, which is a Gnostic text and really goes about the same story, that kind of gonzo journalism, where he talks about the discovery of these parchments from the Dead Sea Scrolls, its travels throughout everywhere. And if you can believe it, the Dead Sea Scroll that contained the Gospel of Judas Iscariot, where they make Judas a hero because he causes Jesus to be caught and causes him to be crucified. Jesus says to Judas in this text, "Judas, you above all understand me. You are the man who will sacrifice the man who clothes me." And he's talking about the man, Jesus, is clothing the spirit of the one and has to be killed so that the one can escape and go back to the Pleroma. Really interesting book. So this scroll, this amazing, cool scroll, is actually kept for several years in a non-climate-controlled safe in a, lack of a better term, Plaza Bank safety deposit box for like 20 years. This thing was kept in the worst possible way. Bart Ehrman talks about how he has to go out and he meets with National Geographic folks, and it's this big secret, you know. They're over, I think they were in Switzerland. They're putting this thing back together piece by piece and trying to validate, is this actually the Gospel of Judas Iscariot? Is it really? And yes, it is. Brilliant book, really cool. Again, Bart Ehrman, anything by that guy is pretty good. You recently were talking about some of your studies about the solar plexus. What's your research been going on right now?
You know, I find it fascinating. You know, you always hear about solar plexus and, like, you know, the abdominal area and gut, you know, gut feelings. And why is, when you get into the esoteric research, why is so much emphasis really put on the stomach, you know, and that area, the solar plexus, the abdominal, like right behind your belly button? Like, why is that so important? And why is that usually the strongest or the weakest part of any trunk or any person? And how important it is. And there's two books that came across about it. And one was from Julian Sexton. And it was written in 1914, called The Psychology of the Solar Plexus and the Subconscious Mind. It's really, really great. I'll get into it in a second. And the second one was from 1920. It was by Dumont, The Solar Plexus of the Abdominal Brain. And both are fairly short, under 60 pages. One's 40, the other one's 60 pages.
Oh,
short.
Wow.
Really, like, awesome, quick, easy to read, written very, very well, and not extremely deep or an old language, which is tough to get through. And they talk about the link and, like, how important when you have that intuition. Well, there's a whole lot more going on. You hear that all the time. We've talked about this in the show, and, oh, I should have gone with my gut, or good thing I followed my gut feelings, like you were talking about in the past couple shows on when you used to work with airplanes.
Yeah.
And how you know, when you fill planes, and how important it was just to follow your gut. You know, regardless if it's personal, business, pleasure, family, you know, intuition is really important. And, and how that metaphysical characteristics and how important it is. And again, you know, we've talked about, you know, the allegory of five blind men and an elephant. This is just one small, really, lens at looking at a chakra, or looking at, you know, if you want to call it a glandular system or endocrine gland, and the importance and how important emotionally strong. I've noticed now, after reading this, I've been personally connecting with my stomach and really focusing on following that. Not stomach as in what I ate that day, if it's groggy or something. It's more that emotional feeling. So a lot of emotions, if you really start quieting the mind and getting, you know, to the emotional centers and understanding concentration, you can start to actually feel and understand the difference between ego and gut. It's pretty fascinating when you're able to start really, again, looking at things through lenses. So one of the books that was done by Dumont, he gets into the how to awaken the solar plexus. You know, and it's interesting if you get into a lot of the ancient Rosicrucian manuals, one of the foundational steps, exercises, and a lot of the orders is literally looking in the mirror and focusing on a warm center, like warming up the solar plex area. And that's like, you want to do that for 4 weeks. That's like the exercise, and just focusing on meditation on feeling, understanding the abdominal area and connecting with it. Those two books we'll definitely put in the show notes as well.
Fascinating. I like the idea that these are 40 and 60 pages. I mean, these are books that you could probably knock out in. The average dude that I know probably has 20 to 30 minutes that they're consciously aware that is free time every day. You know, the other unconscious free time we have, we spend scrolling on Facebook. That 20 minute consciousness where you know you got free time coming, if you could pick up a book, I mean, I think I put together a meme one time that talked about how much you could read if you took half of the time you were on Facebook and dedicated it to a book. You could knock out like a 500-page book in like, I don't know, 3 or 4 days or something, I think I wrote. I can't remember what it was. But to have a book that's got pertinent information that tells you what it's about in just a matter-of-fact way without using, you know, $100 words, that's really important to a lot of folks. I mean, Albert Pike, there's a reason why Rex Hutchins wrote A Bridge to Light, right? I mean, it's a bridge to light. It's like, hey, let me take Morals and Dogma and let me just tear out the pages that really matter. I mean, all of Morals and Dogma technically matters, right? But if you could take the Cliff Notes version, boom, here it is, without all the fluff, here it is in an understandable way, Merry Christmas. Scottish Rite valleys all over the world used to give Morals and Dogma away. Now they have a way Bridge to Light. There's a reason why. I mean, it's a pretty damn good book.
Is that what your valley gives away?
My personal valley here in the northern jurisdiction has never really given away a book. They tried to give away recently, the story goes, this book that is about 2.5 inches thick called The History of the Northern Masonic Jurisdiction. Supposedly it's a rich history of the organization. I don't think it paints the organization in a great light. Well, not the best light, I should say. So really, it's like, I think they tried to give it away and then they decided not to stop giving it away. My valley, Valley Chicago, well, I have two valleys, Valley Chicago, Valley St. Louis, but Valley Chicago doesn't give it away. It's like under lock and key, and there's several copies, and every time I go there, I ask for one, and then the guy says, well, give me your phone number, and I'll give you a call, and guess who never calls? I think they just don't want it out there, and you know, maybe they're thinking, like, if I read it, because we do the show and I might talk about it, and if I talk about it in a negative way, or I'm going to bash the Northern Jurisdiction or something, like, listen, I mean, I've already said what I'm going to say about the Northern Jurisdiction in the past. Like, I don't agree with the direction, whatever. It is what it is. It's a great social club, and I like the Scottish Rite regardless whether it's Northern Jurisdiction or Southern Jurisdiction. I think they both have tons of great merits, right? That's why I belong to both, right? If I didn't want to be a member of the Northern Jurisdiction, I would demit. I'm still a member down in St. Louis, so it wouldn't affect me. I like both. So if you're a Northern Jurisdiction guy who thinks RJ hates the Northern Jurisdiction, I don't hate it. I'm more into the education than I am the social side. And I know the Northern Jurisdiction has some valleys that are getting more into the education, and I think that's fantastic. But back to your question, no, they don't give away that book. I was down at Valley St. Louis this last fall reunion, and they gave away Brother Jacob, who is a great educator down there. He was kind of the class facilitator for before, after, during degrees when there was an intermission. I think they got, maybe they got the new Morals and Dogma that was like annotated by
De Hoyos.
Maybe they got that one. But I thought they just got Bridge to Light the last time I was down there. I could be wrong. Brother Jacob, if you're listening, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you guys gave away, I don't think it was Bridge to Light this time, but either way, the importance of having that really nice, concise text is crucial. Especially, I think, it's not so much crucial that we can't understand it, but why make something more complicated than it needs to be? In an age when these books were originally written, Frater, I think that was how people talked during the day. So when you were reading it, it wasn't like it was a difficult read. It was, that's the way people talk. So now people talk an entirely different way. And when you're reading it, you have to apply some sort of antiquated filter to the words and go, oh, okay, these 10 words actually just mean these a conjunction that we would use today. Some it's different. Like it's wrong of me to say that people couldn't understand it. They can. It's just
concentration is key in anything. You're able to concentrate, the more you're able to can then get through it.
Have you ever found yourself like reading and then say to yourself, I'm not even paying attention to this. Let me read the sentence again and again and again. And again, there have been several times where I'm reading a book and I just have to keep reading the same sentence over and over and over again because I can't, somehow a thought keeps interrupting my process of reading it and trying to comprehend what it said. Has that ever happened to you?
Many times. So my question to you is, do you think it's A, is it psychological? Is it the ego? Is it a failsafe of the ego so you can't comprehend it because maybe consciously you're not vibrating? And I know that sounds new agey, but you're not at a certain frequency where you're able to comprehend it? Or is it just something that it's just written horribly that you have a hard time understanding it?
Well, I don't think it's written horribly. I think there's probably a third or a fourth option there that I don't know, but your key to the failsafe, we've talked about that in the past too, right? And that's kind of like the cognitive dissonance that people have, but in a different kind of way. I think maybe, in a way, yeah. Maybe I'm not, quote-unquote, vibrating to the frequency, or maybe at that moment I'm not open to it. And obviously, I mean, that's true to a certain extent, right? Because if I'm allowing a thought about what I'm doing tomorrow or a conversation I had earlier in the day all of a sudden pops into my head while I'm trying to read a sentence, obviously I don't have closure on something else that's interjecting at that time anyway. So in a way, it's definitely a vibrational issue, if you want to call it that. Is it the fail-safe? I think it could be, but like I guess if I was honest with myself and said, am I ready to be reading this text? Would I still have that? I don't know. I feel like I'm ready for these texts that I'm reading, so I don't think I have a failsafe that's like popping off. But then again, what do I know, right? I mean, I'm just a thing in the meat suit. But great question. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it's probably horrible writing when it comes to things like Pike and his run-ons. Not a horrible writer, but dude just had, I mean, grammatically correct long sentences, which at times it's like you just put 7 ideas in one sentence and that's difficult.
With 12 different commas.
Yeah. Well, you know, because he wrote like he talked. I do the same thing, but I have my editor go through and go, nope, you can't write this article like you're speaking to them. You need to just write it and take away your commas.
Well, it's always humbling when you're able to check your ego when you write and just separate the I factor and propose it in a different construct.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Pulling yourself out of the text that you're writing is always a good ego check. You hear that, David Wilcock? Sorry, man. Just kidding. You got a good book. All right, so I think we're going to wrap it for this week. Frauder, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thanks again.
Yeah, absolutely. So everybody listening, we're going to have links to stuff that we talked about, the books that we mentioned, and we'll also have a full PDF version of the book we mentioned in the beginning when we were talking with Frauder O. And with that, we'll talk to you guys all next week. All right, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Again, please go ahead and stop by the Facebook page for Frauder O. Give it a like, follow some of his posts there. Pretty interesting things that he's always posting and some of the research he's into. Most of the things we talked about are in the show notes, so please don't forget to check that out on our website, www.wcypodcast.com. If you would like to help out this show and be a producer of this show, we have options for you. First and foremost, you can make a donation to the show via our PayPal secure donation, where every penny goes back into this program. Secondly, you can click on the link for our limited edition shop, where you can pick up our lapel pin, which they're made exclusively by Edgar Alejandro of Masonic Revival. These are a higher quality, solid brass, 24 karat gold plating, hard-fired, colored enamel, and it's got a strong butterfly clasp on the back of the pin, and that's what makes this pin particularly outstanding. Never mind that it's a triangle, which is pretty darn cool in itself, and that the design is totally unique. You're not going to find this design anywhere else. This isn't something that anybody else has. The triangle shape, alluding to the self, the spiritual, and material. It's also used to symbolize those first craft degrees. And in the outer triangle, symbolizing the external. We have a red border on it, and the red was used to symbolize the Holy Royal Arch chapter. The words, "Whence came you," are used in the ritual, and were the words on my mentor's favorite bumper sticker. And those are on the pin itself. The secondary triangle symbolizes the internal, the inside of which is contained all the other symbols, and the working tools inside man are all the tools we need to work on our temporal building. The square encompasses, as in the ritual, the square to square our actions and the compasses to circumscribe and keep us within due bounds. The gavel, as in ritual, to break off the rough and superfluous parts of life. The setting mole reminds us that death is near at all times. Work diligently. The plumb line reminds us of the rectitude of life and our actions. The all-seeing eye reminds us of the ever-watchful eye of the Creator, also to the mind's eye, from which emanate the rays of light on the pin. The rays of light on the pin, there are actually seven of them. That's very specific, each representing one of the seven liberal arts and sciences: grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. And the rays emanate from the all-seeing eye, or the mind's eye. Green is used because the color in masonry is synonymous with education, and the sprigs of acacia symbolize the perpetuation of life after death and the eternity of the soul. And of course, we have the cipher symbols on there, translating into WCY. It's really cool. That design is also available on a money clip, a tie bar, and some cufflinks, so check them out when you get a chance. You can also support the show via our Support the Show link, where you can pick up King Solomon's Reserve Beard Oil, where half of the proceeds go right back to this show. You can pick up some Alpha Brain from Onnit Labs by clicking the links. Use the promo code WCY at checkout. You'll get 10% off there. Same with FreemasonryArt.com, 10% off from the great artworks of Juan Sepulveda of the Winding Stairs Masonic Podcast. And of course, that's King Solomon's Beard Oil is done by Bankers Best. So if you go to buybankersbest.com and you use the promo code BBWCY357, you'll actually get 20% off. So those are all the cool ways you can support this show and make a difference and be a producer. So I really do appreciate all the donations and the pin sales and everything that everybody's done for this show, because it makes it so that I can bring this show to you, and I'm just so honored to do that. Lastly, if you like Masonic podcasts, please don't forget to check out the Masonic Roundtable. We go live every Tuesday at 10-9 Central every week. No holidays fall on a Tuesday, so we're pretty much always going to be live. There's only been a couple instances where we've had to set it off a later date or a later time, but it's always on and we're always there. And one of the best parts about that show is we do it live, and you can interact with us as we do the show. You can type questions into Facebook, you can type them onto Twitter, and we get them and answer them right there when we get to the social media segment of the show. It's really fun. Lastly, the Midnight Freemasons, the premier Masonic blog on the internet. 3 articles every week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and we got some great stuff. Over 1,000 articles right there for you to use. Some articles have been used twice, but they are updated, so everything's different. It's a huge amount of original content. And if you want to use an article in your trestle boards or in a presentation, just let us know if it went over well. Just make sure that you always use the original author's credit for the paper creation and the authorship, and we're all good. So check those things out, and I will talk to you in about 2 weeks, but Adam Thayer will be on next week for our Christmas episode. So until then, I hope you have just the most amazing holiday and great new year, and I'll talk to you all then. So until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.